Welcome to Researching Peace, the podcast presented by the Department of Peace and Conflict Research at Uppsala University. Today we'll continue with looking into how AI is impacting the field of peace and conflict research. And in today's episode, we will embark on a journey through climate change, food security, political violence and AI, and with a special spotlight on the work of an exceptional researcher here at the department, Paula Vesco. Paula studies the relationship between climate extremes, food production, and the risk of conflict. These impact millions worldwide, and her insights are critical in a world grappling with environmental changes at a rapid pace. A warm welcome, Paula. How was that introduction? Did I miss anything important?
Thank you. Thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to be here. I feel this was way too generous. In the recent years, I've been more and more interested in the inverse relationship. So what I do now is focus and study the impacts that climate-related shocks and extremes can have on the ability of society to respond and make societies more vulnerable to other shocks. And especially I'm interested in how armed conflict and climate extremes can interact and impact societies. For example, how vulnerable societies are and what humanitarian needs arise from these shocks. But I'm also very interested. I'm a bit of a geek myself.
That's a fantastic thing to be, though.
Yeah, especially in this place.
At the university.
So I have been more and more interested in machine learning and AI, which I use as a way to investigate these topics. But my background is on climate change. So I actually come from Venice. And I think there's no better, unfortunately, but there's no better city to do your PhD if you're interested in climate change. I did my PhD in Venice. My department was the Department of Economics. And it was really close to the canal. And you had a very, very beautiful view of the town. I think it never stopped amazing me.
Fantastic. Tell us also what it is that you do here at the department.
I work for the Violence and Impact Early Warning System, but my research mostly revolves around the relationship between climate extremes, especially food production and armed conflict. And the reason why I apply AI and I'm very interested in machine learning is because this relationship is highly nonlinear and is very complex and difficult to understand. So I use also AI and machine learning techniques to try and understand this relationship better.
This might be a stupid question, but with food production, is that farming and like that?
Yes, it's actually a very good question. With food production, I mean mostly agricultural production. So, for example, in some old research I've been doing during my PhD, I was interested in exploring how climate extremes and climate-related changes may affect the geographical distribution of crops. What this means, or what I argue in that research, is that when you have climate extremes and climatic changes that develop at different pace, this may shape the way that crops are produced. And it might be that the distribution of these crops in a country change so that the regions that are agricultural become more and more agricultural, and those that are not are more and more affected by the negative impacts of climate. And we do find that this is the case, that climate actually affects the geographical distribution of crop production. And this in turn affects the propensity of people to fight.
What are you working on at the moment?
So now I'm mostly researching the impacts that armed conflict alone or when combined with other shocks, such as climate extremes, can have on societies, especially societal vulnerability. And what I mean with vulnerability is how much societies and groups are affected, negatively affected by, for example, climate-related hazards. So we know that armed conflict has a lot of negative impacts on societal dimensions. For example, it increases food insecurity, it undermines access to fresh water, it halts or slows down economic growth, and so on. But all these impacts have been studied in silos. So we do not know how the impacts on one dimension are connected to the impacts on another dimension. And we think that the result of this might be that we actually end up underestimating the impacts that armed conflict can have on society overall.
Could you give an example of that?
Yes, absolutely. So, for example, we know that when there is a conflict, unfortunately, we have many examples right now, we know that the affected population lacks access to water. And right. This is something that we see, for example, in Gaza mm-hmm. right now, where there is a water emergency. But the access to water, the lack of access to water also means that the outbreak of disease, such as diarrhea diseases, and especially children and pregnant women related disease, increases. The impact that conflict has on one dimension is related to another dimension. So right. The impact of on water gives rise to higher likelihood of disease. And in turn, we know that negative impacts on health may affect the way or the propensity of people to cooperate and trust each other. And again, trust is related to political institutions. So institutions may be more likely to have or experience an authoritarian drift. All these elements of society are greatly affected by conflict and war. But we lack an understanding of the relationship between those impacts. And it might be that when we account for this relationship, then we understand that the final or total impact on society is much higher, unfortunately, than what we could estimate by looking at, for example, only one sector.
I know that you work with VIEWS, you told us earlier. Could you explain a little bit more what VIEWS is and what you do there?
VIEWS stands for Violence and Impact Early Warning System. The main goal of the project was to forecast, so predict into the future, what is the risk of conflict. The research has developed in the last few years, so we now also predict the number of deaths that are associated to conflict, and this is very much ongoing work. We're also going to predict the impacts that conflicts have on societies. So what I mentioned before. For example, we aim at being able to predict how many displaced people there will be because of conflict, or what is the impact of conflict on malnutrition, and so on.
Do you look into those conflict as we see on the news right now?
Yes, anything. So our input data and the outcome that we use to develop our machine learning models is the data that come from the UCDP, the Uppsala Conflict Data Program, which in turn collect their information from the news and other sources. So everything that is reflected in the UCDP data is also part of our project.
And can you also briefly explain in what way you use AI for VIEWS?
The AI is mostly used for conflict prediction, as I mentioned. So what we do is we take the data that is provided by the Uppsala Conflict Data Program, and we say that we train the models. What this means is that we analyze the data and we divide it in different portions, and we use part of this data that can be, for example, the data on conflict from 2000 to 2020 to make the model learn. And then once the model's learned something about conflict and the causes of conflict, then we can use this insight to forecast what we expect to happen in the future. And our forecasts are monthly. So we produce a forecast of fatalities associated with conflict for every month until 3 years into the future.
Who is using this data?
We get a lot of different users. So many of them are academics, other researchers in very different fields that are interested in the data. And these are data not only on conflict that come from UCDP, but also we collect data on different predictors of conflict. So, for example, economic conditions yes. or climate, as we mentioned, and so on. And a lot of academics are interested because, of course, we know that data processing is very time consuming. And so they want, because we offer open access to this data, they want to take advantage of it. But in terms of predictions, we have a lot of users that come from the policy world. So we work a lot with the World Bank, the UN, also governments. We have been working with the UK Foreign Ministry, the German Foreign Ministry. All these governmental and international organizations are very interested in using our predictions. And I think there has been a trend, an increasing attention towards forecasting by all these agencies.
So do they change something in the in their plan work because of the information they get from you?
Well, that's what we hope. But, you know, we say if a prediction was perfect, you wouldn't need it, right? And you would never know. And that's true, because if you make a perfect conflict prediction, then you wouldn't be able to see what actually happened and how it differs from your models. But I don't think we're there yet, that our predictions are able to influence political decisions so much. But what I think is important is that all these predictions exist and are done by intelligence agencies and a lot of other actors, but they are not transparent. And what we do is very committed to open access and transparency. So this is the main advantage. Everybody can access these predictions, and then they can allocate resources, for example, to prevent conflict. So hopefully the idea is that the policymakers will integrate these predictions into their strategies. To what extent they do, that I'm not sure I can estimate.
What are your upcoming works or papers in the near future, Paula?
We have been working now with different colleagues at the UCDP and PRIO as well, on a paper that tries to measure the uncertainty in conflict data. And this might be obvious for certain listeners, but it's not that obvious in conflict research, where I feel like we don't discuss uncertainty that often. So what we are trying to do is to develop a statistical method to estimate some sort of interval. So what we are doing is to have a survey with the experts from the UCDP team, and then we use all this knowledge that they have been developing for decades as an input to a statistical model that estimates how certain or uncertain are the fatalities. To give you an example, the UCDP collects data on conflict, and for a certain conflict event can say, we recorded 100 fatalities. And that's our best estimate. But we actually do not know how accurate this is in detail. We want to have a range. So in addition to this 100 deaths estimate, we can say we're pretty sure that the deaths were between 90 and 120. And we think that this information on the range can be useful to policymakers and also to academics, because it gives a measure of uncertainty about the conflict data.
I mean, so first you CDP code how many people died in a certain conflict, and then you check how accurate it is and see how sure you can actually be of the numbers.
Yes, in a way you can interpret it as how accurate, but also we know that everything, and this may end up being a bit philosophical here, but we know that every
love that theme.
I'm happy to. I also love philosophy, but everything, every piece of data comes with an associated uncertainty, right?
Right.
This idea of uncertainty actually came from talking with a physicist. My partner is a physicist, and for them, for natural scientists, it's crazy that we social scientists don't talk about uncertainty. So if you think about data that are released by the World Bank or the IMF, to give you an example, on GDP, the gross domestic product, they give us one number, and we do the same with any social science data. But what I argue is important to do is, instead of one number, we should have a range. We should say, this is the lowest possible estimate, and this is the highest. So instead of 100, people see, okay, I'm 99% sure that the number I'm looking at is between 50 and 110. And then they can do whatever they want with this range. But they're not super confident that is an exact estimate.
And why is the range so important?
The range is important because it shapes the confidence that the end user can have on a number. So it's very difficult, especially this is my experience with working with policymakers and government agencies. They always expect researchers to provide a black and white answer. And this is why it's very difficult to communicate risks and uncertainties. They look at the conflict forecast and they ask us, yes, but what are the causes of conflict? Or they look at a conflict prediction and they tend to interpret it without as an exact estimate. Instead, it's very important to communicate that this is not an exact estimate. And then, for example, if you say, we expect between 20 and 100 fatalities, this is very different than saying, we expect 50 fatalities. Then they can decide, is 20 a good high enough number to intervene and maybe allocate resources to conflict prevention? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. It should be a policymaking perspective to decide based on the range.
If we try to look ahead a little bit, how do you think the role of AI for your work will look like in, let's say, the next decade?
I think AI, and especially now with the rise of tools like ChatGPT, will make my work much easier. I'm extremely excited about AI and all the power that these technologies can give us. I also think that techniques like ChatGPT or similar will also give me a lot of time for thinking and being creative and learning because I wouldn't have to spend a lot of time programming or fixing bugs in my code, correcting my mistakes in terms of technical coding. And this is extremely exciting for me because this means that I can do what I like the most, which is brainstorming and thinking about ideas and talking to colleagues about research projects. So I think that's the most exciting innovation in how I expect AI to change my work in the future.
Do you see any risks?
So I think there is a risk that we overestimate the power of these tools.
Yeah.
And in a way, we are too confident about them. So there are inherent biases. That's probably the highest risk that I see in our work. So we know that, for example, if you use an algorithm, because this algorithm has been trained on data that are that come from time series or from the past, all this data come with biases. So for example, if you have data on men and women, it's very likely that this data can contain some sort of gender bias. And this bias can be exacerbated by technologies because they have been trained on this past data. So I think this is one of the risks to be mindful of in our work.
Thank you so much, Paola Vesco, for joining us today at Researching Peace. I'm really looking forward to follow your work. It's exciting to see what's going to happen with AI and everything with views.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. And thank you also to our listeners for tuning in Researching Peace today. We hope that today's discussion has inspired and informed you as much as it has for us. This was actually the last episode for this season. We will be back later on next year. Thank you very much.